Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey. Again, back at it with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, what are you seeing in this midsummer or early summer?
A pleasure to be here. Yeah, starting out with some good vibes already, but a pleasure to be here again with our guest today and very excited because our guest has gone a little bit of a different path than what we've talked to in terms of some of our guests before. So I think this is going to be a little bit different take and really excited to speak with our guest today.
So I'm going to pull back the curtain now and reveal part of our process. When we meet good people, we'll always follow up because we want to hear their feedback. What did you hear from your network? All that kind of good stuff. Because obviously that has helped shape the direction of the podcast. But one of the other questions is, who else do you know that would be a great fit for the podcast? And I have to say, this was the very first time someone turned around and said, oh my God, you have to talk to my husband. He's got such a great story. And of course, that was Melanie Skeppers from Coconut Software. So Melanie, thank you for this because we are absolutely thrilled to welcome Jeff Skeppers, head of sales and owner at ClickClick Systems to the podcast. Jeff, glad to have you here.
Thank you, Robin. Al is so excited to be here and share what I can about my story.
Well, let's go through a bit of a bio because I know you lead a proudly Canadian business known for innovative ceiling display solutions used by retailers, businesses, and institutions worldwide. ClickClick Systems are engineered for safety, efficiency and ease of use, making overhead signage and decor installation a one-person job. With a sharp eye for customer experience and global growth, Jeff has steered the company into international markets while maintaining its strong roots in local manufacturing design. His leadership blends business acumen with a clear focus on problem solving, innovation, and creating real-world value for your clients. So here's where I'd like to start, Jeff, because when I talked to Melanie and she said, hey, he's got a great story. And I said, okay, give me the Reader's Digest version just before I meet you. And you do have a really interesting story because you had an entire career before you did this and then had this, in my mind, quite a pivot. So can you give us the origin story about how that all happened, where you came from, and what led you to the position you're in now?
Yeah. So thank you so much for that wonderful intro, by the way. You reminded me of all the things that we're doing here and that we're doing for this business. ClickClick, very excited about it. But yeah, the way we got here, I got here about a year and a half ago, and I got here through acquiring the business. My background was in technology and software specifically. I had worked for some of the big guys, the IBMs and the Oracles of the world over the last nearly 25 years. And then a few years ago, sort of was looking for a new challenge. I had a little bit of a gap in my career. I had always sort of wanted to own my own business and wasn't sure, you know, when the time was right. Of course, when you're in your career and the machinations of that, it's like, it's hard to break away from that. But because I had a little bit of a pause, I had an opportunity to explore acquiring a business and I started hunting for one. And sure enough, about a year and a half ago, we closed on one. We were super excited to do it. It was a total pivot away from technology. We're now in manufacturing of hard goods that are supplied to dozens of countries in five different continents around the world. And so, yeah, it's been a real adventure. I'm having a great time doing it. And so is my business partner. And so, yeah, it's been quite a ride so far.
Now, what's the story with your business partner? How did you get partnered up with someone? So I can understand you always wanted to own your own business, but like, is this someone that came with the business? Is this a life buddy? Like, how did this happen?
You're right. It was a buddy. And in fact, a childhood friend, my closest friend growing up. So we've known each other since we've been about 12 years old. And his background was in insurance restoration and the management there and operations efficiency. And so we had kind of these different backgrounds where I was sales and marketing and he was kind of operations, and he was looking for a break in his career as well. And so now we had done some little side projects. We had a Christmas light business for a season where we were hanging people's Christmas lights and selling them. And we have some residential real estate investments as well. And so we had already kind of worked together. And when we both kind of had this pause and this need to find something new for ourselves, we thought, let's go in this together and let's come together and find a business that we can really capitalize on the skills that we've already built.
I love the story. And I actually ran into guys yesterday. They're in the healthcare space. And same thing, they've gone down the path. They're childhood buddies, had other careers, wanted to run a business. And they're just, you can just see, it's really nice actually to see, like, they're just so excited about working together. And one of the questions that I had asked them and I'd ask you is, business isn't always easy. Me, Al, and Joe are not childhood friends. We became friends for many years of working together. And I think we still enjoy working with each other. But there are times when you have to have difficult conversations with each other. Have you had the conversation with your buddy to say, hey, at some point we may run into conversations that are going to be kind of outside of our friendship, and how are we going to make sure we remain friends along the way? Like, have you put structures in place to make sure, hey, we can kind of have it all, as it were?
Yeah, it was very important to us because we both valued the friendship so greatly. We didn't want to, you know, do this and just put that all at risk. And then your professional life is in turmoil and your personal life is in turmoil. You know, we didn't want to do that. So we did have some very honest conversations with each other saying, look, what happens if we do run into this conflict? How do we resolve that? And both of us, the first thing that we agreed on is, look, we're not going to let business get in the way of our friendship. So if there's ever a choice, it's going to be our friendship first, and the business will have to suffer as a result of that. And that's okay. That's the decision that we're both going to make. But I'll tell you, the one thing is about sort of conflict resolution, and we've had that, you know, is that it's all for the right reasons. Because we're friends, there's no ego here. Nobody is trying to make sure that they don't look bad in front of it. You know, it's none of that. It's really about, it might be two different perspectives as to how to move a business forward successfully, but they're both come from a place of honesty and integrity and respect. And I think those are sort of the values that we both hold in our friendship and professional life that have allowed us to do this so far, so good.
Jeff, one of the things you said when you were talking about how this business came together, you said, I've always wanted to own my own business. Can you just talk a little bit about that? Where do you think it came from? What was the driver?
So I think for me, I'm a bit of a control guy. I like to be able to sort of influence things and take control of my own destiny. And I think from my perspective, a lot of it was driven by that. Now, I may have always wanted to do it, Al, but I certainly needed to build the skills in other businesses in order to be successful in this one, even though this was a huge divergence from kind of the type of business that I was in previously. You know, I'm super thrilled that I had all these corporate experiences, and as difficult and challenging as some of them were, they were all enjoyable. And the skill sets that I built there were critical to owning my own business. But a lot of it was control. And I think it was to see what I was made of, right? And to really test myself, I think. You know, when you're working in a big corporate world, your job's kind of in a box, and that's okay, right? Because the organism of the corporation has to work together. And so everybody needs their role. But the challenge becomes when you want to stretch out of that box and you want to have a greater influence over the success and ultimate outcomes of the business. And so that's really part of the reason why I needed to do this.
So that's a perfect segue, because I did want to explore the differences between what you were doing before and what you're doing now, because you've mentioned a lot of my previous career was with some big corporations. Suddenly now you're not in that little box, like you just said, working for a big corporation. Now you're, I guess you might say, you're in a much smaller, leaner company, doing some different things, maybe having to think outside of the box a little bit. What are some of the biggest takeaways for you, some of the biggest lessons, and maybe some of the biggest challenges of going from that big corporate space where, I don't want to say everything was defined for you, but you probably had a very specific role, versus now you kind of got to look after everything. Something comes up, there's no one else to turn to. It's you.
That's right. It's very fluid, right? And people talk about wearing a lot of hats, and that's what you do, especially in a small business. And that's a very different experience than the one that I had had in the past. I think For the most part, it's a very different experience in the corporate world, and sort of moving to a small business, especially one that's a product-focused business versus a technology, sort of an intangible-focused business, was a change. But I've learned a bunch of lessons along the way. I think, for one, you start to learn that as a small business, your leverage with some of your suppliers and some of your business partners, it changes very dramatically. You know, when I was at Oracle and we needed help from some of our business partners and suppliers, they were falling all over themselves to help you. As a small business, your voice doesn't carry as far. And so when you're working with business partners, you certainly need to understand where your leverage lies and where it doesn't, and how you'd kind of work inside those boundaries. Now, on the flip side of that, the beauty about kind of the small business area is that you're more flexible and more nimble. I mean, that's not groundbreaking information, but what it does mean is okay, you're not getting kind of what you need from this supplier. Well, you can pivot really quickly. You can pivot whether it's a product or it's a process or whatever it might be, or even sort of a marketing message, and you can pivot very, very quickly. And so those are a couple of things that have been like super sort of invigorating from that perspective, but also a lesson learned. Like, you got to remember, you're kind of a smaller player now, a smaller fish in a big ocean. And there are some drawbacks with that, but they're all just unique challenges that you deal with.
Jeff, I've lost count, actually. I used to keep them. I keep most of them still, because I believe if a life is worth living, it's worth recording. Yes, that's another Tony Robbins saying. The audience is saying, God, this guy, that's all he does. But I've always believed that. And I've gone through so many pens and so many notebooks, because that is how I call it writing my future. So it's interesting when you get in conversations with other entrepreneurs and find out, what are you thinking about beyond the day-to-day? So if someone were to ask me that, I'm thinking probably 1, 3, and 5 years out. And I can tell you on any given day what that looks like. Now, that's evolved over time and that continues to evolve. And my wife is saying, like, you know, what are you writing about today? How has it changed? Right? Because it does evolve with new experiences and things that happen in life. But I'd love to hear just, what's your approach for planning for the future? What does that look like? What's the dream?
Yeah. So first of all, like the process and then sort of the outcome, I think, Robin. So yeah, the process is very similar to yours. I kind of look at kind of an immediate future, and that might be a 3, 6, 12 months, and then kind of a longer term thing, or a midterm, and then kind of a longer term thing. And I live in kind of what if scenarios. And so when we're making sort of bigger decisions, whether that's professionally or in my personal life, I'm kind of doing the what ifs. Okay. And then for better or for worse, I kind of look at the worst case scenario. And for me, that's always kind of worked, because, okay, if I take this path, what's the worst case scenario if it doesn't work out? And then I kind of move back from there, because usually it isn't the worst case scenario that's going to be the most likely. And so you start to feel better about making some of these bigger decisions and committing to them overall. I mean, the other piece of it is, I love the spreadsheet thing, right? And those what if scenarios from a, you know, when I can quantify them, they sort of play out in spreadsheet modeling and all of these other fun things that we do in order to ensure that I can kind of feel comfortable with the plan and what moves forward. But you're quite right. Like, things change. We have a family at home and we go through different stages of, you know, our kids are growing and are going through different stages. And now we're planning for maybe driver's licenses and university, where before we were planning for a Disney World trip. Like, it's a very different world than it was even a few years ago from us, from a personal perspective. But it's nice because those things kind of all fit together with the business ownership perspective as well. So it's kind of good there.
Al, I'm going to throw a question over to you, actually, because something that Jeff had said, now I'm wondering, because it's very interesting, and I'm wondering if it relates to the planning that you do, because planning for the worst case scenario on the estate planning and financial planning side, is that a valid, what's the word I'm looking for, approach, planning for that worst case scenario if the worst happened? Because Jeff, just for context, we were on a podcast this morning with a company called LaVie Executive Healthcare. So they do, you know, the top to bottom, 6 hours, you get the whole shebang. Really, really great people. Anyone is listening, if you want to check out LaVie, they're fantastic. But it's just, you know, we don't take time to do that. But you're going in, even if nothing is presenting wrong with you, you're going in because you want to avoid that worst case scenario. So Al, I've never asked Al, and I've never heard that, planning for the worst case scenario. So Al, maybe you can chime in there, because I'd be curious your answer.
Absolutely. You know, obviously, when we are speaking with clients, one of the things that we're always talking about is making sure that you've looked after that worst case scenario. And that's just removing risk off the table, right? You've got the things that you want to do. You got the things that you're good at. You got the things that you want to focus on. The last thing you want to worry about is something that you can't control, but you certainly can manage. Right. And you can move that risk over to someone else.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely the approach. And that's, I'm sure you do that in business as well, Jeff.
I love the way that you put that, Al. I mean, you know, things that sort of you can't control, but you can sort of manage how you're going to deal with them, or how your family is going to deal with them, or how your business is going to deal with them. And like, people can hear sort of worst case scenario and say, yeah. Like, and think that it's kind of a negative thing. But in my mind, it's not. It's just setting aside. All of a sudden you have a plan. Okay, now I can just put that thing away. Now let's focus on the most likely scenario and kind of work forward from there. And so I'm with you. I think it's about managing that. I think that's a really great way of putting it.
Jeff, you talked about the planning part from the business. Are you comfortable? Is there anything you want to share? Do you do the same thing on the family side? Like, do you plan some of these things out? You know, you said some of the considerations were maybe now around university and driver's license and that kind of thing. But do you take the same approach personally? Because some people do. Some people, we had someone on a podcast and they talked about the day they took and sat down and basically planned out all their goals and what they were going to try to do for the next year on their personal side, something we quite often do business-wise, but maybe not personally. What about that?
I do. On the personal side, it's essentially the same process. I think probably I started on the personal side, to be honest with you, Alan. I brought it to the kind of the business side. It's like, it makes me feel comfortable that I can see where I'm headed. It's a path. It's a roadmap for where we're headed in life. So for me, it's there's spreadsheets and there's constant discussions inside of our household about what the future might look like. And I don't want to confuse that with not being present, because you do need to be present and focused in the moment as well. And it's not always about looking ahead, but it's also about making sure that in the moment that you know that the path is there and you're headed the right way. And then you can sort of focus on what's in front of you right that day.
Yeah, I think that's important. You bring up a great point. And I think there are lots of people who really spend so much time potentially on their business, not just engaged in it, but planning for it, and maybe forget some of the things that are happening on the personal side, or as we spoke about this morning, Robin, on the health side, yeah. Right? That's another thing that people quite often forget about. So to bring that all together is obviously important. Hey, can we maybe dive a little bit deeper into a little bit about the business itself, and specifically, you're in a little bit of a unique space, I think, in terms of what you do and the company that you're running. Can you talk a little bit about the process that you use to identify your customer pain points and then coming up with solutions for them?
So the business, just for listeners quickly, is we essentially manufacture and distribute tools that allow you to hang signs and decor without using a ladder. Simple, right? Our customers are the Walmarts and the Home Hardwares and the Winners of the world who want to hang promotional signage in order to ensure that they can get their promo and their message out to their customers. It's professional decorators that are hanging up balloons for an event. And it's nursing home staff that are hanging up Christmas decor when the season runs around. So that's what we're doing. And we're offering a solution that's sort of speedy and professional and has an element of safety, because you're kind of throwing away the ladder at that point. So that's kind of what we do in a nutshell. Now, getting back to your question about, you know, how we go about understanding customer needs and client needs, we have kind of these different markets that we're serving, right? Where we have a retailer, for example, who wants to make sure that the signage goes up quickly, right? Their sales are starting this week and ending next week. And so they want to get this signage up quickly. They don't have a cherry picker. They need to make sure that that happens. They don't want to necessarily have one of their staff up on a ladder. I mean, there's 500,000 ladder accidents in the US every year. So they want to try and keep people's feet on the floor. And so that's kind of what they're solving for. We're a professional decorator. They might be in an event hall that they've never been in before. And so they don't even have access to a ladder. So we're solving for a very different problem in those sort of different markets. Now, do they want to get on a ladder? Probably not. So there's similar value that we're delivering out there. But part of what we do is make sure that we stay as close as we can to our customers. We have great distributors, but we are constantly talking to professional decorators, to retailers, making sure that we understand what they need and even what the sort of adjacent problems to the ones that we're solving. So if we're solving a problem of professional decor being hung quickly, what's another problem that's there? Well, they have like other signage, like permanent signage. So can we help solve a problem around permanent signage that's going to go up in a store and kind of stay there? And so I learned kind of in my corporate life around kind of this idea of like intellectual curiosity, just asking questions to better understand who you're talking to and who you're working with. And there's a bunch of interesting things that always bubble up from those conversations that can help you potentially solve a problem. And then you got to figure out whether or not the problem is worth solving. Okay, would somebody pay for that problem, you know, from a business perspective? And if they would, and then how much? And then you kind of work from there and figure out if your company is the right one to be able to help this customer base solve those problems. And so that's kind of the process with which we sort of uncover client needs. Now, in fairness, I'm about 18 months into this business. And so we've been busy doing system optimization, and we've been busy rebranding, and we've been busy doing our website and all these fun things. And so back to the kind of small business, big business thing. The small business thing is you got to pick what you need to do first, because it's the same people doing everything, and prioritize it. And so that's what we're doing right now. But we got a lot of great ideas and some things in the works. And so we hope to release some new stuff to our customers here in the near future.
One of the things that you said that stuck in my mind was you used the term intellectual curiosity and getting to understand your customers and asking questions and potentially bubbling up some of their problems. One of the things that personally I find and that I'm always get frustrated with is when you're talking to someone, they're trying to solve the wrong problem. They're trying to solve the problem that they think you should solve versus the problem that you personally want to solve. So when I heard you say that, that resonated with me because I've gone through that a few times myself where you're talking to someone and they've got a great idea, but it's really not the problem that you're trying to solve at all.
I understand. And you know what? I feel like when I first got into sales many years ago, I feel like I learned a lot of lessons there. I'll tell you, my dad was a machinist and he always sort of had this very contentious relationship with salespeople. And so when I became a salesperson, and you can read the Freudian whatever into that, but when I became a salesperson, he kind of, but what I learned was that, back to your issue, Al, is that a lot of salespeople, and the challenge that he had was they talk at you, right? Instead of trying to understand what your problem was and then match up a solution to it, they're just trying to get there and tell you the story that they have to tell as quickly as they can and not really ask any questions or listen. And I found that the best salespeople were fantastic listeners and that they would just sort of really pull the problems out of their prospects and listen to what the issues are and then see what you can do about fixing them, not the other way around. So I completely understand.
Such a great point about being a great listener. And for anyone in sales, they should really take that to heart. I remember how many years ago, Al? It was during COVID, we filmed our corporate videos. So they're a couple of years old right now, but I encourage anyone, go on to ariabenefits.ca or lifelegacy.ca. We've got both videos there. To this day, I love them. I love them. I mean, I love them for nostalgic reasons. My dad's, there's his picture in there and he was in the business, but they're just so well done. But my point is, we had three vendors come in, and the first two, bigger shops, more expensive. And they told us all the great stuff they were going to do. And no one really asked any questions. And then a sole practitioner, or she had a small crew, came in and she asked us so many questions and wanted to know. And the three of us, the three partners, looked at each other like, oh my gosh, this is easy. It's an easy choice, right? Because we felt cared about and what was important to her. And that's such a good point, that as a sales, you want to talk a lot and tell them all the great stuff you do, but it's that listening skill that is really valuable. I want to go back because you triggered some other nostalgia for me as well. So I want to ask you just a fun question, because I remember, and your kids are going to remember this as well, as they, you know, hit 16 and qualify for their license and all that kind of good stuff. What was your first car, Jeff?
Oh, well, so my first car was a beat up old Chrysler Sebring.
Nice.
It wasn't my first pick, but it was the right price on the lot and it had no power. It had a nice sunroof. You know, I love that. But you know what? It got me through the first couple of years and yeah, it was a decent car for me.
You never forget that first car. Al, what was yours again? You've told me before.
A 1969 Mustang.
Oh. Al's just showing off now. You know,
that's a very nice car, Al. Yes.
Yeah. It was. 17 years old. I just turned 17, saved all my money and owned a 69 Mustang.
Well, let that be a listen to my kids if they're listening. Save your money.
Save your money.
And it could be a Mustang instead of a Sebring. And there's a big difference between those two.
Now I have to modify my version. And I'll say it was a 1986 Vette. I leave out the part, the Chevette. Yeah, it was a Chevette. And I got to tell you guys a funny story. So I'm coming back, and of course, I was young, and I'm coming from Wasega Beach, and I'm coming the on-ramp, and a police officer sees me, and he does a U-ey, and I'm trying to go as, you know, keep up with the 100. And this Chevette, there's four of us loaded into. I have the pedal to the floor, and I can't keep up to 100. And my mistake was I went in the passing lane. And he pulled me over for like, hey, you're blocking traffic. I'm like, it's this car. So he was very nice. He let me off and he said, well, just stay in the right lane if you can't keep up the pace. But yeah, too funny. But the serious question I did want to ask you outside of nostalgia is, what does success look like to you?
So I think that question, it cuts in two different ways. And we've been talking a lot about kind of the personal / professional worlds that we all live in that obviously overlap to greater or lesser degrees, depending on, you know, what we've chosen, how we've chosen to balance our life. But for me, when looking in the personal side, it's making sure that I have time with my family, that I'm there for 95% of the dinners. You know, I'm starting with the personal because on the professional side, you can make as much money as you want, but you can't buy time. And so in my mind, like you have to think about sort of the personal, what you want out of your personal life. And for me, it's that, it's being around, it's being the dad that I expect my son to be and being supportive of my wife and hopefully my daughter turning into the mom that we hope she will be one day if she chooses. And so that's the first and foremost. And then I sort of look at my professional life after that and say, okay, what does success look like for me there? And what is that? And that's making sure I get the right balance. That's making sure that we can do the things that we want to do as a family, you know, and it funds that. It's really the means to the end. It's not the other way around. You know, I worked with a lot of people in the corporate world who thought nothing of spending every other week on an airplane away from their families. And that was seemed fine for them. It really wasn't for me. And another reason why I sort of left that corporate world, because there was at some point you hit that rung in the ladder where that's the expectation. And, you know, I stepped away from that for a reason. So I already feel like we're hitting some measure of success. And yes, we'll keep setting those goals forward, but like things are good. And we keep reminding ourselves of that and then setting sort of these incremental goals at the 1 and 3 and 5 year, and we'll hit them or we won't. And if we don't, and we're going to do our best to do it, but if we don't, then we're going to iterate and learn why. And that's success too. So it's a very broad definition. I get that, Robin. It's hard for me to put in, you know, 3 bullets. And I think some people would probably say I would need to, but personally, I feel like we're headed the right direction. And I love that. And I can see the path in front of us, you know, both from ClickClick's perspective and from a personal perspective. So we're getting there.
I think that's a great answer. And I think that will resonate with a lot of people in terms of maybe you're not at each level that you want to get to yet. But, and I would say that, I won't speak for Al, but I would say that like I feel very successful at this point in my life, right? And I haven't achieved, like, you know, it's funny, 20 years into this partnership, I feel like, oh, we're just scratching the surface still, right? But I do feel success. And so I think your answer will resonate with a lot of people. Jeff, I honestly can't recall if we sent you Al's signature question in advance, but we're going to throw it at you. If you weren't prepared, you didn't have an answer, hey, we can edit that out, but I'm pretty sure you would have an answer. So Al, I'll let you take over.
I'm pretty sure Jeff was prepared for this. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any proverbial trees that you might be planting, and that could be professionally or in your personal life, that you hope will benefit others down the road?
Yeah. First of all, I think it's a great question, Al. As I listen to the podcast with numerous guests and listen to their varied answers, you know, I can't promise I'm going to have anything like groundbreaking, unique, but it's just so fascinating to hear people talk about this. For me, it's, you know, on the professional level, especially when I left the corporate world, I found that a lot of people were interested in how we did this acquisition, why we did it, what were the drivers, when did I know it was the right time? And as a result, that's created this opportunity for me to do a bunch of coaching. And I just do that out of my own sort of spare time. And that's fine. And I love to do it. And so if there's ever anybody who thinks that some of my experiences might be beneficial to them, I always just encourage them to reach out to me on LinkedIn and I'll make some time. Because I feel like that's the biggest thing that I can do is share these experiences. And some of them are not great. Look, we make mistakes like everybody else. And in fact, I think there's almost more value in sharing that through these coaching sessions is some of the mistakes I've made along the way. And then people can kind of learn from that and help. So there's coaching that I'm kind of doing constantly with colleagues and friends and things like that. And that's one way. And then this other thing, you know, on the personal side is kind of what I talked about, which is making sure that I'm at home, making sure that my kids understand at least what I perceive to be the right work-life balance and what I perceive to be present as a dad, as a parent. And so that's important too. And then there's another thing, and Robin and Al, you and I talked about this in sort of other calls, but like this idea of integrity in business and integrity in your personal life. And that's a big value that I'm trying to instill in everybody I work with and everybody I interact with on a personal level, that I'm sort of, that integrity kind of rules the day, and everything else you can kind of figure out along the way. Because once you have that, then there's this recurring theme of trust that happens that we talk about in this podcast. I think, you know, that's something that comes from integrity and only from integrity. So that's kind of what I'm doing.
Oh, that's great. And I'm really glad you shared the part about coaching or mentoring or however you want to phrase it, you know, people who are thinking about going down that path, and your willingness to pay it forward, so to speak,
for sure,
and be able to share some of the things that you've gone through to help them out. That's great.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Jeff, after our first call, I sent Millie an email and I said, oh, thanks for the intro to Jeff. Such a cool guy, right? And I hit send and I said to my wife, I said, can you just read this for a second? She goes, you sound like a little bit of a fanboy. Such a cool guy. But I thought, you know what? This guy is cool, so I don't care. And you know what? We've developed a really good relationship already. So, hey, listen, I think it works. So that's good.
Well, you guys make it easy to build rapport with you, first of all. And second of all, I want to tell you, Robin, I got a call almost the second after we hung up, probably a second after you sent that, from Melanie saying, so how'd it go with Robin? and I said, well, I just got off the phone with him. How did you know that? And it all came. Anyways, it was a good chuckle. So thank you for that. We had a laugh.
No, it was great. So, well, listen, for listeners who are interested in finding more about you or what you're doing, or maybe even your coaching, what's the best way to reach out?
Best way is LinkedIn. Always respond to you. Just shoot me a note anytime or connect. Let me know that you heard me on the podcast. That'd be great. Or come visit us at clickclick.com, which is CLIK-CLIK.com, and shoot us a note through there too. Come check out what we've got. And we think we're doing some cool things. So yeah, be great to share anything you need.
Okay. Awesome. Jeff, thanks for doing this. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or join in the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here again. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.